Good morning, everyone, and welcome to session 3 of Gazarino's Target 2021. Our first talk today on this session is Ruby for the Win by Christoph Lippholz. If you have any questions during the talk, just write them into our IRC channel. You will find a link on our homepage to the chat server. I will then relay those questions to Christoph at the end of the talk, and he will then answer those for you. So without further ado, Christoph, you have the word.
Ahoy, this is Ruby for the Win for the Linux Target 2021. From a certain point of view, programming languages have a lot of similarities to choosing a tool for a certain job. So let's say programming languages are kind of tools. And with tools, they also have in common that they are created to solve some problem in a different, mostly more simple or elegant way than other tools do. Therefore, we might also say that the more tools you know, the better you know if you could save some time, effort, or sanity using something else. There's a good practice that ensures that we keep up studying. It states that we should learn at least one new programming language every year. If you study new concepts from time to time, it will not just enrich your toolset, it will also change your perspective on different problems. And it will help you figure out better solutions. Suppose you learn a new language, then do not compare to what you currently are aware of, but try to figure out what the inventors of this tool were trying to solve. I'm Christoph, and I spend a lot of time building software. For the last decade, I tried to study at least one new programming language every year. And now I use Go, sometimes Python, JavaScript, and some other tools on a daily basis. However, I'm especially grateful that I can spend a lot of time using Ruby. In this talk, I want to share with you some of my thoughts on Ruby. I picked up Ruby for the first time somewhere around 13 to 15 years ago, and it resisted to be the number one tool of choice for me. For the first part of this talk, I want to start with some facets that I really like. And as I think the best way to get to know something is to see it in action, I will do some live coding in the second part. After that, I will close with pointing to some selected resources. And if there's some time left, we can also go for more code. In the final part, there's some extra time reserved for a question and answer session. Let's get started. Ruby is an interpreted object-oriented programming language that is known to focus on developer happiness. Any Ruby software creator profits from code that is easy to read and easy to write. The important thing is that it is produced to be extra easy to read. Pretty easy to guess what the code snippet does, right? I could have also just read out the statement, 7 times print hello world, and ask you what you think it will result to. Now, this style of code can be attributed to the inventor and chief designer of the language. His name is Yukihiro Matsumoto, and he's also referred to as Mats, and he has a strong eye on the language structure and design. And it seems he's also responsible for the very nice community of Ruby. A widely known statement in the Ruby community is Mats is nice, so we are nice. And Ruby is then to follow this mantra. I think I don't have to explain how valuable it is to have a community that loves to share code, knowledge, and tends to be extra nice to each other. Rubyists are helpful and welcome you at any point. There are not many rules to follow when coding in Ruby, but a lot of good examples and best practices. After some time coding Ruby, the conventions given will just feel right. And several times it happened to me that I've come up with almost the very same code to a problem that I later found written by someone else. And it is impressive to see how you learn to think in certain ways without being forced in a specific direction. This code snippet has a variable user, and active suffixed with a question mark is sent to it. It is likely that you will expect true or false reading this line. The same goes with the array assigned to a variable a below. The message clearly checks if 2 is a member of that array. Ruby allows you to use UTF-8 in your source code, so you can, as in the example, define methods that end with a question sign. And anytime you see such a method, you can for sure expect that it will return some value that evaluates to either true or false. This is no feature of the language, but this is the way the community sorted out would be a good style. And no one tells you to do that in this way. But now that you know about it, it will be very likely that you will write methods like this as well. The array 1, 2, 2 responds with a new array 1, 2 when unique is sent to it. The original array in the variable a is not changed. However, using the destructive method below will not create a new array, but change the existing one. It changes some internals, and this might not be expected. Therefore, it notifies the reader with the exclamation mark. But if a method ends with an exclamation mark, it will do something destructive. Like in this case, it will change the internals of an object. In other cases, it could also raise an error if arguments or internals that are provided are not as expected. A nice correlation is that where everything in Unix is a file, everything in Ruby is an object. This line of code is extracted from a project that is using the popular web framework Ruby on Rails. When I started working with Ruby, one of the very first things that blew my mind was the way you can deal with time. As time handling was such a pain to me using other tools, I was really excited to see such an easy and elegant approach. This snippet uses some database abstraction and queries all users that were created in the last 3 days. Or in other words, users were created at is greater than equals 3 days ago. For this presentation, I decided to build a package that offers this time handling from scratch. For sure, in a very simplified version, but we should end up being able to recreate this statement. Let's do some coding. First of all, I start by creating a new directory, go in it, and for every project that I start, I also create a Git repository, even if I'm just doing it locally. And I start my projects with writing a README. giving some name to the project, I choose Timeless for this one. And the very least that should be present for any project is one or two sentences describing the project. If you cannot describe the project, you probably should go back to planning and think about what you're going to do. And this should be a time handling package to showcase the beauty of Ruby. The very next that I do is adding some usage in the README so that I have an idea how the myself or some other user will end up using my package or my project. For this, we will have some Ruby code. We want to require our Timeless package. And then we should be able to have methods like 5 days, 5 hours, combine them, 5 minutes. And also apply some from now to this result. And what we should result of is some kind of time that will be in the future. Not necessary to specify here. Another thing that I want to start with always is to think about the environment that I work in, which will result in some section about development. So if some other developer picks up the project, he or she should at least know how to start. So the Ruby dependencies, Ruby packages, managed in so-called Ruby gems, or gems in short. And there's a system-wide package manager that is called gem. And with gem, you can install dependencies. However, I want to install them only on a project base. And there's a widely used package manager for a local, so for project-based dependencies. And it is called Bundler. And with Bundler, when I have installed Bundler on my system, then I can run Bundler install on my repository, and it will install all dependencies. We will also have write some tests. So in order to run these tests, you have to execute this statement. So Bundler exec ensures that the dependencies of the project are loaded, and Ruby tests will run all tests in the test directory. And for sure, we will also play around with our code. Therefore, we can use the interactive Ruby shell and require our Timeless package. And also, we will build some example in the end that we also want to be able to run. For sure, on my system, I have already installed Bundler, so I can initialize a new bundle information here, which results in a gem file, also called gem file. And we're going to add at least one dependency. You don't have to take care for the first three lines. It's just about where to find the dependencies. And we want to include the test framework mini test, which is really small, simple, but gives a lot of features. I also want to have all my dependencies installed in this directory. So I configure Bundler to use the bus vendor bundle. And when I bundle install, it will fetch Minitest, and this is the only dependencies. And cool thing is Minitest has no other dependencies. Bundler will create a log file, so our installed dependencies are pinned down to this specific version. And it also created the vendor directory where we can find our dependencies now. And I don't want to have the vendor directory in my Git repository, so I add it to a Gitignore. And the rest I can commit now. Ruby's embrace testing, and you probably won't find any widely used package that has not tests. So let's also start with some tests. I'll make test directory. First thing we have to do is require a minitest, and we want it to automatically find our tests. Additionally, we want a more colorful output. So we include this package, and I write it just as a command, but we later have to include our timeless package again, also, so that our code is included, and it's enough to create a class prefixed with test and derive it from minitest. And minitest with autorun will automatically find this test case. And if any method in the class prefixed with test underline will be executed as a test. So what we want to have is something like 5 days, and we convert it to an integer so we can compare it easily, and we will compare it to 5 times 24 hours, 60 minutes, 60 seconds, and it should result to the same thing. Now I can run my test, bundle exec ruby, and it should fail because integer has no method days. We can even check this because I start another interactive Ruby shell, and you can inspect the objects at runtime. And for example, we can check the class of five. Five is an integer. We can even check the public methods defined for this class. Let's close this window. And we see, okay, 5 days, there is no 5 days. As a cool example, there are other methods defined by default in Ruby core. For example, we have odd and even, so we can, this brings us back to the true false example. We can check if 5 is odd or even. Okay, so let's make our test work. So we create our timeless package itself. We start by defining a timeless module, so we have our closed namespace and don't mess with any other package or core functionality. And what we have, if we use 5.days, then we result in something that is kind of a duration. So I will name my class duration. And I need something to work internally with it. So I use the Ruby construct of a class to initialize it with seconds. So seconds will always be given to our duration, and internally we want to store seconds. This is a instance variable of this class, or of this object that gets derived from the class. And we store seconds so we can work with it. What we also want to have is a method days that can be accessed on class level. Self will result in that I have some object, I can use the class itself and call days on it and give some integer. And if I call days, then I want to initiate my duration class. So I call new, so I get an instance. I provide the number received, and I simply multiply it with 24 times 60 times 60 for sure. What we also can do is like to save some effort to multiply it with the seconds. Seconds of a day. Next thing I want to have is I want to compare my duration with some other duration. Therefore, we take the internal seconds and I make an exact compare. I take the other thing and I convert it to an integer. The 2e method is some kind of convention as well. So if you define them, you should receive some integer object, and it's up to you to define it. So let's also define it for us. Duration, what we want to do, if you call two integer, we result in seconds. What's missing now is we still cannot call days on an integer. Therefore, we open up the integer class. This is the core integer class, and we extend it by defining a days method. And now we call our timeless package days, and we send self to it. Self because integer is already the value we want to work with. And as an alias, we define day and days because we don't care if someone used day or days. It's okay to say one day or one days. It's just for better readability, and an alias is perfectly fine for this case. What we now can do is run our tests again. And it does not succeed because our package is still not included. Now it's done. Let's simply extend our functionality, going back to the timeless package, or start with the tests maybe, it's better. And also convert weeks. So let's say we have 1 week. We want to compare it simply to 7 days. That's enough for a test case because days is already tested. And we also want to have combinations. So we assert equal that, for example, 1 week from now minus 14 days results in 7 days ago. Back to our module. What we now have to do is we have to define weeks. We can simply copy and paste the days method. Also alias it for a singular case. And on the duration class, we need weeks as well. We get a number. And for we could now, for example, do days. The time 7, and it will result in a proper instance. We could also just write new and figure out 7 times 24, 60, or just use the number of seconds. So now our test should work again. Let's have a look. For this, I forgot to mention, there's also an internal where on some cases, there's a second conversion to integer that uses to int. So we also write an alias because we make no difference in this case. And bundle exec Ruby tests does fail for one because we have no from now method for sure. So on, we can revisit the error message. Undefined method from now on timeless duration. So let's define it. On duration class, we want to have from now, and we also want to have a go. For this, we don't work any longer with durations, because from now will reset in a specific timestamp. Therefore, we check time, and we make a little trick here. We say we use the time at, which takes any Unix timestamp, and we take the current time, two integers, so it's results also the seconds in Unix timestamp, and from now we add the seconds that we got in our duration. And we also, just to get safe, to be safe, we define it to be in UTC, just to avoid issues with local time zones. And the same goes for a go, except that we want to have minus seconds instead of increase. So let's run the tests again. And all work. As a final step, we want to recreate the statement from the slides. Therefore, I start with a new file, example. But first, let's get back to gemfile and add more dependencies, because we actually also want to query some database. And therefore, I've selected Mongo database because it's really simple to set it up and don't need to define a scheme forward. So I use MongoIt, which is a MongoDB database abstraction. And I also use a gem called Faker, which is really, really nice. It's dummy data generators. So we can have some data that is more interesting. And what I also use is Spry, which is a debugger. Then we have to install our dependencies again, run bundle install, which is now a lot of more, because especially the MongoIt framework will need more dependencies for sure. We can also revisit gemfile.log to see, okay, it's much longer list now. And get back to a just example file. Now we have to require MongoIt, require Baker, require Pry, and also import our timeless package. First, I have to do some dirty work configuring the database. Default. I will start the local MongoDB database that I've prepared using Botman. And it serves the database on port 27.0.17, and I also need a database name. And I create a user model, includes the MongoIt document, so it has all features of the MongoIt document. I create the field name of type string, a field joined at of type time. And as I've already tried this example several times, I will also make sure there is no data in the database unless there is no data in the database. So user count is zero. let's have some statement that we see what's going on. We print generating test data. And we are going to create 500 users. So we go into a loop with 500 times. We create user create. And the name should be a random name from our Faker name generator. Also joined at should be some random date in the last 14 days. And that we know where we are, we make a dot every time a user is created. And for the final user, when we finished, we start a new line. Last thing I have to do is to bind our debugger. So the debugger we fire up, and we can then interactively play with our data, and we already have the user model defined. So let's give it a try. Ruby. It generates test data. Now I can check. Okay, we have 500 user. We pick up the last user, check the name of this user, and it's the Han Bunny Rolfsen. Let's take the first, maybe the better name, Johnny Rutke. So, and now we want to query our data and say joined at greater than equal, let's say 1 day ago, and let's see how many users this are. 22. We can plug their names. And maybe also the joint date. And then we see, okay, maybe also sorted, then it's easier to read. So order by joint date, descending order. And we see these are all users that were created in the last day from our test data. The code we have just written was built for demonstrational purpose. If you want to start with Ruby, it might be a really bad idea that the first thing you do is manipulating its very basic objects. For this presentation, however, I think it was a quite good fit. If you like the short demonstration and you want to see more Ruby code, let me point you to some proper resources. This presentation, the slides, and all code, and even more than is shown, so more tests, more methods on integer, is published at GitHub. Currently, there are only 10 repositories showing up when you search for Ruby for the win. So I'm sure you will find it quite quickly. You should visit Try Ruby on the official site of the language to get a guided tour and a nice playground in your web browser. Then you can have a look at Exercism. Exercism is an open source platform that supports you when you learn a programming language. It currently has around 50 language tracks where you solve a task, and then you get feedback from real people that are quite experts in the language given. You should note that those people are volunteers, and you should not be mad if it takes some time to get reviews on your solution. I follow this project since 2013, and I also contribute there as a mentor for several language tracks. So the chances are good that you could receive some code review from me on your solution written in Ruby. The next is Ruby on Rails. If you are into web development, you should definitely browse through the guides of the Ruby on Rails framework, which is the basis for websites like GitHub, GitLab, and Shopify. It is a huge collection of many packages that provide awesome Ruby code, and it also offers great ways to build web applications. When you have spent some time with Ruby, it is time to meet its widely used static code analyzer, RuboCop. This tool will help you use and understand best practices from the Ruby community. And besides, it is a real great project and it bundles so much knowledge. For me, it took quite some time to stop hating this tool and get the value behind. So don't give up easily and check it out. I'm Christoph and I use Unused as nickname in the Linux Tag IRC channel at OFTC, and you can find me also at GitHub with the username Unused. If you want to contact me after the event, you will probably find some email address when DuckDuckGoing my name, but the easiest way is to write on Twitter, where I go with the username LibDuckGuid. Big thanks for the Linux Tag team for organizing this event, and many thanks for joining my talk. I'm looking forward to your questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Christoph. That was a really awesome talk. I really enjoyed it myself. So I've looked into Ruby a couple of years ago, with such a talk, I probably would have stayed longer because that was really impressive, especially like how easy it is to make really nicely readable statements. So really, nice. Really great. I haven't seen any questions yet in IRC, but since we have time, I'll say we wait a couple of minutes and see if something else, someone shows up. Oh, there's a question. Meister Luke asks, how do you compare Ruby dependency management to Python's?
Well, I had troubles with Python. I never had troubles with Ruby, which is a lie. But I don't think I can easily compare it because I think both is great. But my knowledge is better in Ruby than in Pip, so in Bundler and Gems, and which is also counts for what I'm doing is also managing the Ruby version, like with there are tools like Arbenf and others where you can set the proper Ruby version for your project. It automatically switches the Ruby version, and then you also install the dependencies into this version, so you can reuse them or also do it on a project level, and this really goes very, very smooth. And I did very rarely have troubles with dependencies. The only thing that happened one time was people deleting dependencies, which is for sure can happen in any language, and for sure it's the code of someone else. And if it is open source, it should be very fine. But it's impressive how fast the Ruby community was reacting with such situation. Because I know, like in JavaScript, this is not good. Yes. Hard to compare. I'm sorry that I cannot go into details that much.
I guess it's also, it's different languages that have different philosophies, so even the package management might have different philosophies.
Yes.
So there's another question, again, a comparison question. What do you think that Ruby does better than Python?
I like the style much better. This is, it feels more natural to me writing in Ruby. I mostly use Python because nowadays everything you do with machine learning is just way advanced in Python, and especially if you do some data analysis, you will be way faster. But still, I use a combination of both, and I think for a long time Ruby had some troubles with performance, which is now quite good because. Like 10 years ago, it was really bad, and this was also a target for Ruby 3.0, which was released this year, beginning this year. And they tried to increase the performance from the versions 10 years ago to 3 times that fast. And it, for most performance benchmarks that I've seen, it worked. It works well. But still, when I create some small services, then I still stick with Python because I think it's not that much of a resource overhead. Because if Ruby starts to grow, can be challenging. Still, it's pretty fine. So I don't have troubles, and I use it on a large scale.
Yeah, I think it's also a question, right? It's not what is better, but it's what is better for the job you have, right? Using the right tool for the right job.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to point out with using tools, because I think one thing that really gets me all the time when I'm using Ruby is revisiting some old code and looking at the code and finding out how elegant I solved some problem. Because you forget, you know that the basic functionality of your code, but you forget about how you solved some problem, and you revisit it, and if you like your old code, then you know the language is quite good.
Yeah, that's a good idea to look at your own code. Yeah, if you like it, then that's probably because the language was good in the first place.
the question from Master Look, I've opened the IRC from before. Is it justified to patch basic objects? No. It's basically, this is seen as monkey patching. So patching is always a very bad practice seen in Ruby. So you can do it if you have really a tiny fix for something that someone, so a classic monkey patch that you say, okay, some maintainers do not want to include your fix for a problem, then it's okay to open up some objects and batch them. For the example that I've given, I'm not changing anything from the integers themselves. I just extend them. This is kind of okay, but still, this was why I'm warning about this. It's not a good idea if you start with Ruby. You can do this. You should keep it at the very minimum, but then it's pretty fine, and a lot of frameworks do it, but it should make really sense and should fit the situation. And you have to double think if no other package would overwrite your code. So could also happen. Because, for example, what I was extracting is from Ruby on Rails, and if you include the Ruby on Rails packages, they actually will overwrite your code, and you will use them a mixture, which is kind of really bad. And the other question was, can I modify methods of built-in types? Yes, you can, but you should not. That's the big thing. So you can basically change anything, but it's a bad idea. So that's why you should not work on the basic objects level.
Yeah, I guess changing the way an object works is always a bad idea, because then your code does something that other Ruby developers would not expect. So.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see if you have any more questions. Okay, doesn't look like it. Thank you again, Christoph. Very, very nice talk. As I said, I totally enjoyed that. So thank you from me personally and from Kata Linux Tage for this awesome talk. Thank you.
Very kind. Thank you. Okay.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.